Someone once told me that no one says life is fair. When you hear that when you're young, you have no idea what it really means. Once you've lived a little, and then you lose everything, suddenly it makes sense. This podcast is a true life memoir of someone who lost everything and is rebuilding in search of who they once were. They're sharing their story as part of their healing process, and so that anyone else out there living through similar circumstance knows that they're not alone.
Hey everybody, Dave the Clone here, coming to you with another installment of the Feeling It, Healing It, a Diary of Recovery podcast, ongoing journal, never-ending saga of one man's struggle to rebuild and reclaim his life after how to proceed with that statement, right? After the last chivalrous act, possibly, at least in the foreseeable future of his life, after risking it all for what he thought was his dream. And it's an interesting thing where here with our 53rd entry, even though it's entry number 52. If anybody's wondering on the math on that, it's because of the one episode we did that was an interview episode with John Davidson that didn't get a number. And so the next number after that was basically a repeat. So the 13th, the technical 13th episode was our interview with John Davidson, not his real name, not the guy from Hollywood Squares. And then the following episode was numbered entry 13, but it was technically the 14th episode. Just so we're all, you know, anybody late to the game, catching up now, going, why am I going to listen to this guy? He's already got his episode numbers wrong. And I guess part of the question here at this point is, so what now? It's been a full year of these weekly sort of updates to the universe that I throw out there with the hopes that not only folks who used to know me, who might be wondering what happened to me, are getting a sort of update. Other folks who are still going through it know that they're not alone. Folks who are just starting to go through it, finding somebody who's a little further down the road than they are. It is remarkable. I mean, I'm still in a couple of these groups, and I still check in to this one sort of growing, ever-growing, kind of like this podcast, just an unending chat for one of these groups. And new folks come in, folks sort of disappear or sort of go on hiatus for a while. And it's I don't want to say it in a way that makes me feel like I am happy about it, but you can see the vast difference in the folks who are in these conversations between the people who are right at the beginning, like still freshly cut, still freshly bleeding, still trying to figure out how to even approach getting to the stitches to just close the wound, versus the folks who are walking around with the scars of time. And I don't know, I would like to think that I wasn't as blinded to advice or help from others as some of the folks I see in these groups are. But it's really, it's heartbreaking to see the people who are just not even ready to hear. That for as horrible as it feels right now, for as dark as it feels like they're surrounded by the darkness before the dawn that they're still sort of just becoming aware of, that feeling better or not hurting anymore, or like the even just the very first steps of feeling better, are a lot of work that is still going to be ahead of them. A lot of days of confusion and disillusionment and almost a complete abandonment of hope that they're going to have to still get through. And even when they get through those days and then they start having some good days, there will still be a return of those days. The most non-linear experience of our linear journey through time is having to heal from complex trauma. And I don't have a degree in this other than the School of Hard Knocks. And even by all things considered, there are folks going through far worse schools of hard knocks than I am. One of the things I will say that has been even more heartbreaking than seeing the people who are just starting the journey that I've been on for a little over, I mean, probably closer to 2.5, 3 years, but only speaking about it out loud to the world for a year, is that even a group like this is not impervious to internet scammers. Often in the group chat, there will be people who show up saying, hey, do you want to get access to your ex's mobile device and be able to read their texts and emails and be able to finally get the proof you've always thought you needed to catch them in the act? Click this link, and God knows where that link would take you to, you know? There was even somebody in the chat last week who was coming in there and saying, please help me. I spent the last $900 I had sending it to this person through Venmo who I thought I was in love with, and they were supposed to buy me a plane ticket to go and meet them somewhere. And then I get to the airport and I found out that the ticket is fake, and now I'm homeless and I have nowhere to go and I have no family or friends around me. And all I need is some money to be able to get a hotel room. And you're just like, geez, man, you know, like, how is it that the world has become so soulless that those who are already downtrodden are the ones still being like so precision targeted by people who mean to do even more damage? And one of the things I think I've been sort of struggling with is sort of this sense of the impression I was left with after reading The Go-Giver and sort of the lessons there of being you have to give in order to receive. And so as much as I'm still struggling to get on more solid financial footing, one, to be able to give back to my folks for putting up with me and putting me up all this past year, almost 8 months at this point. But you at least want to be there, you know, to lend an ear, to be able to be somebody's shoulder to cry on if they need, or even just to be somebody to validate, you know, the pain that they're in. Because, again, it's a very, I don't want to say exclusive club, but it is a club. And the people outside the club, the people who are fortunate enough to have never experienced the trauma you're trying to recover from, are not equipped to be able to give you what you're looking for. It was rough. It was hard to even do. But there is a person in the chat who comes in every day, multiple times a day, different hours, and all they say is there anyone available to talk? Can somebody please talk to me? I need to talk to somebody. I'm in agony. I'm crying. I can't get over it. My heart's broken. And they've been doing this for like 3.5 months now. And I finally said, listen, I'm saying this from a place of legitimate caring and of someone who knows what it was like to feel like that and who still feels like that sometimes. But if the most work you're doing to heal is coming into this group every day just to ask, is there somebody who I can talk to? You need to realize that you need to seek help from somebody more professionally equipped to help you than just the other folks in this chat who are also trying to heal on their journeys. And I was like, you know, if it's as bad as you're making it out to be, if you really, really need somebody, here's the number for the suicide prevention hotline. And just for anybody out there who's curious, that's 988. You just dial 988 and hit send, and it'll put you on the line. And you know what? There's no shame in having to use that as a free therapist if that's all you have access to. And and he didn't respond to that message. They didn't respond to that. She didn't respond. I'm not telling you what it is. I should saying he was already too much. But they didn't respond to that message. And I just followed up and said, like, I'm not trying to be judgmental and I'm not trying to be mean, but you sound like you're in real distress, and it's not fair to expect the help you're looking for or the help that you need from a bunch of people who are also on healing journeys. Like, we're all there for each other. But if you're, like, on the edge right now, I mean, if we're talking you off the ledge, you call the people who are going to be able to also send, you know, medical pros to your place with a giant inflatable, whatever you call it, inflatable mat. I don't know what they call those things that they, if the jumper was going to jump, at least they could land on this giant, you know, air cushion and then wind up getting hauled off to the rubber room. We really got to figure out a better way. We got to figure out a better way to help everybody. But much as the theme of this world is becoming, the first line of defense has to be us being willing to help each other. It's interesting because, you know, I've often thought, from watching all these movies growing up, this sort of movies that depicted a dystopian future like Terminator, what it would be like to be one of the people living in those kind of settlements, heating your hands around a trash can fire, telling stories of what the world was like before the nuclear war and the machines rose up to kill everybody, and how that is really going to be, I think something like that happening will be the time. And I hate to think that it wouldn't happen before that in time enough to be able to stop that kind of a future from happening. But we've become so divided. I'm like so close to taking a break from social media. In fact, I mean, I've definitely had to dial back at least some of the things that I share. Not because I was threatened, but because my now manager, former client, mentioned, like, hey, listen, you know, I know you, we know you, the boss knows you, and, you know, we know we all care about you, but every once in a while, there's some of the things that you post that were kind of like, somebody who didn't know you would just think, holy shit, this guy's kind of unstable, and who knows, that could be part of the reason why you weren't getting more bites than you got, or getting further in your interview processes than you got, you know, because there's, even though, you know, I've got my account pretty locked down, unless you're friends with me, you don't really get to see my stuff. I don't post publicly. And any of the platforms I do post publicly on, I usually am pretty mild. On Instagram, for the last 2 years, there has been a lot of anti-narcissist stuff, and a lot of vulnerable stuff. And in true fashion of the disappointment of the current generations and rising generations, and that's not to say that there weren't heartless, uncaring bastards in my generation and the generation above mine and the generation between mine and the current generations, but there used to always be a sort of an unspoken social contract level of where people would draw the line between throwing fuel on the fire and just sitting back and watching you go through the fire on your own, right? And so there was a post. I wasn't actually crying, but I had the face of somebody on the verge of crying. And it was supposed to be one of these sort of like motivational posts, not only for myself, but again, like for the audience of this show, to say that even though this is what it feels like right now, I'm not staying in bed all day with my head under the covers. I'm still getting up and going out and moving forward and getting work done and trying to find a job and trying and trying and trying. And that's the key, is to never give up. And at some point, because I made something of a self-admittedly judgmental comment on a post, I'm trying to figure out how to edge into this. There have been episodes of this show where I've kind of opened the door a bit to how some of my perspective could be considered a little bit more on the conservative side these days than it ever has been before in my life. I think part of the issue is not so much that I've changed, but that the landscape slid around underneath me as far as the sliding scale goes. You know, I've always considered myself a pretty liberal person and very much a person in the vein of, hey, everyone, do what you want, be who you want, be who you are. But your life should not impinge on my life and vice versa. Just like I'm doing what I want over here, leaving you the fuck alone. I expect you to live your life, but leaving in such a way that you leave me the fuck alone, unless we're involved in each other's lives. And I think the only way that that would happen is if we were sort of in somewhat agreement about certain universal truths, right? And not everybody's going to be on that same level, and that's okay. But it never used to be this, like, I demand participation in my version of reality versus you living in your reality over there and not infringing on mine and vice versa. So every once in a while, and what I'm saying is not necessarily addressing what you might be thinking it's addressing by hearing this. And the fact that I need to make that distinction is kind of also a sort of example of how much the landscape has slid, how much the scale has tipped or moved, and what was once considered liberal is now considered conservative, because liberal is now in a whole other generation of wow. And I think part of what I was judging is sort of this new level of depravity that is not only accepted, but almost being encouraged at this point and has become somewhat of a lifestyle for so many. So much so that there are concerns about its implications for the future. And that only comes up for me when I consider things like, okay, it's been 3 years since the nuke of my life went off. Year one, I absolutely had no desire to move into a new romantic situation in order to get over it. I kind of recognized the sort of toxicity and self-sabotage of that, yet at the same time I did. So as much as I recognized those things, I was trying to be very conscious of the need for human connection, but not letting it blind me to the danger of being so vulnerable and putting so many eggs in those kinds of baskets. In fact, it's sort of part of the where I'm at now, where it's been a really like a truly being alone for a full year and starting to wonder if there's any place in the what's left of my future for me. For what I had once considered a pretty solid component of what I had pictured my future to be. And I think that's part of, like, I'm jumping around a lot, I know. And I think that's indicative of sort of the, I don't want to say malaise, it's not necessarily a malaise anymore, but it is a sort of, okay, it's been a year of sort of working through this and much more of a focused effort. There have been a lot of realizations. There have been a lot of setbacks. There have been a lot of recoveries from setbacks. And then additional setbacks. A lot of hopes getting built up. A lot of hopes getting knocked back down. A certain level of stability has started to take root. But there's this very real sense of it's still not enough. It's an important stepping stone, but I still need to figure out more, and I'm working on that. And still, there's no real room in how much work is left to do there for the additional work of, okay, how do you go out and meet somebody new? Even though there have been things lesson-wise, information-wise, education-wise that have said, you know, not having that could be playing a role in the level of detriment. There are certain mental health positives that come from having a partner, not only from an additional support perspective, but just from a cure to the loneliness perspective. If your soul is something, if your soul is a soul that feels incomplete without a partner, a big thing I'm getting to in the very, like, I'm talking like the last couple of weeks reading The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, which, for anyone who's been keeping track at home, is one of the major thinkers that sort of played into Jim Carrey's revelations over the last couple of years of what we are versus what we appear to be versus what we think this world is, and how we cannot find our true selves until we really do the work of disassociating ourselves from what we think we are, as far as what we are on the outside, what we do for a living. It's very much in the sort of the Fight Club, you know, you're not your job, you're not your bank account, but it's a little bit deeper than that. It's the whole idea of, you know, the level he takes it to, the level that Tolle takes it to, is the idea of we are all components of the life force of the universe experiencing itself from various different perspectives. That you are not the thoughts you think, you are not the brain, you are not even the name that you were given, you are not the physical form that you operate under. The actual energy and life force underneath all of that is an extension of the source of all energy and life in the world and in the universe. And the sooner you can find a way to step out of that almost prison, if you want to look at it that way, but the sort of restrictive distinction of thinking of yourself strictly as your thoughts and who you are physically, until you can do that, you're always going to be in this kind of never-ending, impossible-to-solve labyrinth that tricks you into thinking the answer is just right around the next corner. The answer is getting to the center of the labyrinth to be able to get your baby brother back from the Goblin King and home before your parents come home from going out for the night. And I know that's very new wavy, probably turns a few people listening to this off. And I'm just putting it out there as something that when I read it, I kind of felt the truth behind it. I kind of felt a certain, like, that makes the most sense out of anything. And I've even been on, even with me being on this more religious journey lately and attending church for, I don't know, since October. So what is that? November, December, January, March, November, December, January, March, April. 6 months. I'm actually, not because Russell Brand just did it, but I'm definitely going to be getting baptized soon, just because I'm feeling myself being pulled in that direction. But at the same time, I, as a parallel to that, I'm feeling this other sort of level of, like, really, because where I'm at, the anxiety I still wake up with every day is like, okay, well, you have this part-time thing going on, and why is everything still being defined by, are you bringing in enough money? You know, because as much as the world, this hologram that we're living in, doesn't necessarily in its truth conform to all of these things that we've put on it. You know, I mean, whatever energy was behind the creation of all this, do we really think that it cared about whether or not we established the concept of Social Security? I think it would be pretty disappointed in us if it was aware of or understood what we do as far as with money and taxes and sort of the way we've structured reality. Like, I guess it, in the simplest terms, is like the memes where it says, well, why do I have to pay just to exist? You know, how close are we getting to a breathing tax where every breath is going to be tracked by either our phones or, God forbid, any of us actually do get chipped and accept the mark of the beast? You know, it's funny. I was reading an article earlier today that said these are doomed professions to avoid because they will be gone within the next 10 years. And the first one on it was accountants. And I spent 16 years in a corporate position working for the accounting profession. And the part-time job I have now is with an accounting organization. And I gotta tell you, from the people I know and the work I see being done, as much as there are all these artificial intelligence tools and softwares and things that are being kind of created to take over the actual mundanity of the profession, the actual just adding up and dividing the numbers and all that, you still need the human imagination. Although, I don't know, maybe this is something really to consider. I mean, look at what we've been using AI for, and look at what people are pushing us to use AI for. You know, artificial intelligence, we thought would be used to create maybe the Matrix or create a power grid that didn't cost any money, universal energy for everybody. And if it didn't require human labor, then maybe it wouldn't cost human money. Instead, we were like, hey, this chatbot can create pictures based on random prompts that I give it. And the pictures look like they could have been painted by Renaissance painters. Or, hey, this chatbot can write your blog for you and you can become a charlatan too and pretend that it's yours and put your name on it. Now, I think maybe it's the creative in me that sees a real, if we haven't sold our souls completely yet, that is one way to do it, right? To be able to say, oh yeah, this is Dave's blog written completely by an artificially intelligent bot, but he puts his name on it because he asked the bot the question that yielded this 2-page response about journaling. Now, in full transparency, if I start selling journals on my Etsy store and I start doing blog posts about the benefits of journaling and the many ways that journaling can be helpful in whatever form it is, whether it's creative journaling or keeping track of your diet and exercise routine to better your life, or prayer journaling, gratitude journaling. Yeah, I'll probably use AI to write some posts because we live in a time where the demand for constant information is sort of the deciding factor of whether your endeavor and effort and entrepreneurial risk is going to pay off. It's no longer just about what you say. It's about how often you say it and how many different ways. In a lot of ways, we could kind of think that this might have been engineered so that everybody's just addicted to the beta wave control system, otherwise known as entertainment. I can't deny that a certain level of cynicism has taken really strong root because of the more pragmatic, okay, it's doing me no good to be crying about stuff anymore, especially stuff like the job situation. And as much as my soul hurts about it, there's no denying that the direction this is all moving in is, if you don't find a way to integrate AI in some way into what you're doing, you're just asking to be left behind and fail. And I think for me, as much as I'm really on this trip about finding the sense of being and realizing I'm part of the unending source of life and energy in the universe and not just some guy trying to get out of his parents' house, there's a certain amount of this guy wanting to get out of his parents' house and wanting to have his own place again and not ready to give up on the possibility of that. And the possibility of that depends heavily on figuring out how to bend the will of this artificially created construct we all have to survive in to my needs. I have to Neo this shit so that I have enough money to be able to pay for the place, to pay for the groceries, to pay for the sustenance, to pay for the utilities. And it's like being at this weird level where it's like you can see all the bosses pulling their bullshit, and you can also see all the other people who are unconscious of it just going along on their day-to-day, and you're kind of in this weird, it hurts more because you realize what's going on level. And meanwhile, becoming more enlightened with all this education that I'm getting for myself that's saying all those things that you're caring about, the fact that you care about them so much is why you're not getting them. You know, like at this point, I've read 98 daily teachings in The Secret. I've watched the documentary multiple times. I do affirmations. I listen to solfeggio frequencies. I try to program my subconscious to be open to receiving abundance from the universe. I refuse to pay my friend from high school multiple thousands of dollars for her to teach me how to do this. And maybe that's what's holding me back, apparently. But you would think even by accident I would have manifested something by now. And there is a part of me that does feel a strange level of comfort in thinking, well, this is still part of the growing. This is still part of the journey. Every time I see one of Gary Vaynerchuk's posts that says, you're not, what is the one today? You're not late, or you're not out of time. You're not a failure. You're just early in your process. And I feel like there's so much truth in what he says, but at the same time, is the only reason he's able to say this is because he's sitting on billions of dollars and doesn't have to worry about not having a place to sleep. You know? And there, it's hard, too, to have all these people kind of really pushing in your face, especially people half my age going, if you're not making money with the internet right now, what the fuck, dude? You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know what to tell you. You're kind of just asking to be miserable. And it's sort of like, well, if you're such a philanthropist, I'd love for you to just kind of show me one way to do it that won't cost me more money than I can afford to spend. But maybe that is, maybe it's like that's where I'm at. I'm at that final level in the video game where like the last step I really need to take is taking a risk again, which I'm so fucking afraid to do because the last risk I took was so big and I gambled so much. It's like I just watched Indecent Proposal on Paramount Plus because the movie podcast I listened to covered it not too long ago, and I hadn't seen it since I was a wee tyke, a teenager, when that movie came out in the 90s. And it's hard to watch these movies and be identifying with the people who are putting their last couple thousand dollars onto the roulette table and then watching it all just fucking disappear and get pulled away by the long arm of the dealer, you know, who just looks at them all sad, but knowing, like, hey, dude, you risked it and you lost, and now it's ours. Of course, that's the beginning of that movie, where then they, you know, desperate couple are swooped in and quote-unquote saved by the billionaire who makes the indecent proposal of $1 million for a night with the guy's wife. And I don't have even the beginning of a perspective to know. You know, I think there was a time where there was a cynical side of me that would have been like, oh yeah, listen, that's life-changing money right there. It's the answer to our prayers. I just have to be okay with my wife being unfaithful to me for one night. And it's funny because, like, in the movie, they sort of depict that for a minute it almost worked, but, which I feel like I would identify with more, the guy couldn't handle it. And the funniest part of that is, a part of me feels like I already handled it, just without the benefit of being paid $1 million to do so, because it is undeniable that my ex was unfaithful to me. Even though we weren't married, we were in a committed relationship that I risked my entire life for. And I know for a fact that there were times where she was not at home and she was out for a significant amount of time, not responding to calls or texts, even from her own kids. And during those times, there is a very high likelihood she was engaged at least in sexual activity, if not an entire other relationship that was being started up, because, as I learned later, 3 months after we broke up, she was engaged to somebody else. So watching this movie and feeling this weird identification with these people going, holy shit, you know, I feel for that guy. Would I have been able to go through that? And maybe that's why it was so hard to watch. Maybe that's why subconsciously I was feeling so uneasy watching it, because I was going, I've been through this. I just didn't have the benefit of them, of my partner being honest about it. I didn't have the benefit of being involved in a decision being made about it. There was no indecent proposal from a billionaire to give us $1 million for the act. I'm just somebody who risked their whole life, and it still happens. So maybe I would be able to get through it for $1 million. $1 million isn't even what it once was, but for me right now, it would be huge. This is a very weird place for this rant to have devolved to, but it's really coming down to, okay, at this point, so much ground has been covered. So much distance. I've come so far from where I was when this all started. But one thing I'm still realizing I don't know is who I really am and what I really want and what the next step is. And I was really struggling with, because I've gotten a couple more rejection notices from jobs that I applied to. And even sort of having a little bit of a existential crisis type response to something happening with one of my new clients. I was really having to face the possibility that the time I've spent on this journey, the time I spent taking that huge risk and putting my whole life on the line, and then in the couple years here recovering, I have been not paying attention as much as I should have been to the trends in the field in which I have skills. You know, obviously, producing media for social media is a little bit of a different beast than the videos that I've garnered several awards for over the course of my career, doing more corporate video, long form video, documentary style video. And I was really struggling with, is part of my problem that I haven't owned up to that fact to myself, that, you know what, you let your skills go. You have a huge blind spot now, and instead of figuring out how to recover that, you're just throwing your resume out there and hoping someone will just give you a shot and that you can then figure it out, hit the ground running someplace new. And then in the midst of all that, I delivered a project on Friday that blew my employer away. And really has sort of evolved the production value of this campaign that I've been working on for almost a year now, and that a month from now we're going to start releasing to the world. And it sort of brought me back down to earth a little bit of like, no, I'm just casting too wide a net. I'm sort of being a little too indiscriminate about where I'm applying. I'm not looking for the right home. I'm hoping the right home finds me. And I need to start being a little bit more deliberate about how I'm doing that. So I guess that's kind of like the key, is having enough awareness to start realizing, okay, this is, at least from a skills perspective, this is where you would thrive. Instead of just taking anything that says video and applying to it, look for the place that feels like it would be the right place for you. Now, the thing that sucks is that it's not just me, it's hundreds of people. And who knows? Who knows the true myriad factors involved in how people are making their decisions? I do still hold pretty steadfast to any place that didn't choose me, fuck it, it was the wrong place for me in any case. Because if it was the right place, they would have chose me. I'm just hoping there is a right place left for me. And if not, then I need to figure out how to make my own place. You know, one of the sort of tenets of the folks out there who are these successful entrepreneurs, the people who bootstrapped themselves up to being in that millionaire, billionaire, stratospheric success level, they were able to understand and accept and adapt to the truth in that you have to make your own opportunities. Opportunities aren't just going to come looking for you. And so I have to figure out how I can do that. What kind of opportunities do I want to create for myself? I certainly don't really feel that going back into a corporate place, a corporate position, is the right place. But in the last couple weeks, I've been getting out into the world a little bit more. I've had family either come visit or that I've gone to visit, and that those visits have then included going out and either going shopping or going to eat out at restaurants or going to walk on the boardwalk down by the beach and just kind of interacting with the world more than sitting in my parents' basement and editing video. And I do, to come back to the topic of loneliness and realizing that the lack of human interaction is not as much as it's easier and allows for the time to be navigated easier, especially if it's focusing on getting work done, I do miss interacting with people. I don't know that feeling would be assuaged by getting a job waiting tables, but it would certainly be a way to be interacting with people every day. In fact, I was just actually out for dinner with my folks tonight. My uncle's visiting. And I felt myself sort of keeping watch, just like taking note of what it was like for the folks who were working at the restaurant. And I was saying to myself, you know, they're making it seem so effortless. Why in my mind is there such a big buildup of sort of stress and performance anxiety around the idea of this being what I would do? You know, I'm sure you get used to learning how to carry several cups of coffee at once or carry a tray full of dishes. If it's a small enough place, you probably don't have to carry a tray because you can walk a couple dishes at a time over. All of it comes down to the idea of the projections of your mind. You know, deciding you know what something's going to be like before you actually go and do it. That is covered in Eckhart Tolle's book. That is part of the mind itself that you need to break away from. And also the pain body. The pain body is the part of your mind that continuously holds on to your past and uses your past experiences of pain to paint your anxiety about the future. And then I look at, oh, you know, will that be enough money? Will working retail? Probably not. You know, I know this is another reason that I should get off of media completely, is because it's like a constant reminder of like, yeah, you know, the economy is not exactly in favor of people who are struggling right now. In fact, I just saw a chart today that somebody posted that said for the first time in history, the tax rate for billionaires is lower, like on the books lower, than the tax rate for middle class and poor people. And I'm like, if that's not supposed to foster the atmosphere for French-style revolution, I don't know what is. And I think once that fact becomes more widely understood, times are going to get scary. And I feel supremely unprepared to go through that. And I try not to let that fuel that feeling of constantly being out of time or running out of time. But at the same time, it feels that way. You know, as we're going into an election year here, we're only a few months. We're like 6 months away from the election. And then, of course, if you're at anywhere on the map of conspiracy theory, you know that elections are all bullshit and everything is part of the game of distraction, confusion, and control by those who are hoarding all the cash, the ones who have all the power. And it's weird to be reading these books about learning about yourself and detaching from this reality and finding the truth, because it kind of feels like it throws a lot of cold water onto that fire of like, oh, you know, look at all the world is falling down and, you know, the economy and taxes and you're fucked and revolution and dystopia. But at the same time, none of this is real and you're not real and what you think of you isn't really you. And once you get in touch with that, you won't care about any of this shit. And then once you don't care about any of this shit, you'll be open to receive. And then all this abundance that you deserve, you are in deservance of, according to several posts in my feed on Instagram from several channels that are dedicated to the art of manifestation and the power of positive thinking. It's almost like the world is just a giant unhealthy whirlwind and you have to figure out how to find something to hang on to. And I feel like it's those times where you really feel like there's nothing left, that it would be so awesome to have somebody to be able to just wrap your arms around and just hold. And I feel like feeling like that, one of the things that I am more keenly aware of is how much of the focus of my life has really been on that. I think it was sort of resurfacing this week as this whole like, well, would you really care so much if you didn't become famous if you had a partner? You know, would you really care so much if you didn't reach like a wealth status as long as you had somebody who wanted to be with you and who you wanted to be with, and that in these times that you're spending all this mental energy and emotional angst
over trying to figure out how to recover if all that mattered was at the end of the day you guys were falling asleep with your arms around each other? Would it really matter whether you wrote the great American novel, whether you wrote a script that turned into a Netflix series that then unlocked the next couple decades before you're too old to move around, of at least kind of feeling some level of comfort and notoriety and success? Why is so much of your feeling of self-worth attached to the approval from the rest of the world and from the outside? And would all of that disappear if you had a partner, like a true and good partner? And that really kind of, it makes me wish I could apologize for falling into that mentality during my previous engagement. I know I definitely felt that way about that relationship. Like, well, if I don't make it, at least I'm married, at least I have kids. But at the same time, the person that I was with, we were together during the early years of The Walking Dead, right? And we would have people over to watch Walking Dead each week. And there were times I'd be watching that show thinking to myself, well, if this happened and she got bit, maybe I would have a chance to find somebody that I actually am a little bit more compatible with in the zombie apocalypse. You know what I mean? It was sort of like this, well, things are kind of okay. The longer we're together, the less compatible I'm starting to believe we might actually be, especially in the way we see fundamental things about, you know, relationship dynamics and what it would be like to raise children together. But we've already been together for so long, you know, this is just the natural progression of things. But to be thinking that, like, oh, well, at least if we were together during the zombie apocalypse and she got bit, you know, not saying that I wouldn't be trying to protect her the whole time, but if in the course of surviving day to day with hordes of zombies chasing us, if she were to get bit and I were to survive, then I would be roaming around free to find who I'm really supposed to be with. And if it's, you know, if you survive in the zombie apocalypse and then make it to a civilized area where other people survived and you feel that connection with somebody, I mean, that's got to be meant to be, right? You know, that you both wouldn't have survived all that time in the zombie apocalypse to not find each other, right? This is how twisted my fucking mind was. And to be realizing that and sitting here thinking, like, am I really thinking that I need to find that again? But I can't deny the loneliness is getting hard. I'm definitely fucking sick of the rejection from jobs. And what I'm really kind of feeling revealing itself to me is that I'm still stuck in an old way of thinking, while at the same time realizing that the world is so fucking different that if I don't figure out how to flip that switch and get my mind to think, because, I mean, especially to watching the way these kids on the internet are going, dude, I make $30,000 a month on YouTube. How the fuck are you not doing that? You've been on YouTube for 20 years. And it's like, yeah, man. You know, my first thought goes to, well, people just don't like my content. But it's not like the way that they're making the money is not by making content they actually give a shit about, it seems. It's more like they're trying to just game the system. They realize that there's an algorithm running shit. And if they could figure out what the algorithm is pushing and make content that fits into that category, they'll ride the wave. Fuck, did I just figure it out? Was that a moment of revelation that just happened live on this podcast episode? Possibly. And what better way, or what one of the only ways to really be able to do that is to use AI, because regardless of whether it's content you care about or content that just kind of like fits the sort of need of the trend, it still takes time and effort to make that content. And now there are AI-based apps and websites that will literally make the content for you. I just saw one advertised today that's like, the whole purpose behind it is you go there, you say, I need a video about weight loss, about the benefits of exercise, about the history of water. And within 10 minutes, this thing will just fully form. I'm talking like sourced the footage, wrote the script, did the voiceover, and edited the video. And then it's yours. I'm sure this shit costs money. All these fucking things cost money. And not just like, hey, pay us $20 and now you can use this software. It's like, hey, it's $20 a month. But if you can make $30,000 a month, is spending even $1,000 a month on a website like that not already paying for itself? So, and this is the whole thing. What's the barrier to entry to that? For me, it's my fear of taking the risk of spending that $20, a couple $100, $1,000 to see if it works. You know, granted, too, there's all these people also talking about, oh, yeah, this is how I went from being a fucking lazy teenager to, you know, having a Lamborghini. I just trade stocks for 2 hours a day, and I'm going to teach you how to do it, too. And it's like, all right, if you have that kind of money, like, let me put it to you like this. I think one of the reasons I'm afraid to risk trying this shit, to risk paying somebody to teach me, is because in my mind, here's how this would work. You figure out how to trade stocks, or you figure out how to automate a YouTube channel. You're making $30,000 a month. So $30,000. I actually have to do the math on a calculator right now because that's how tired I am because I'm doing this at night, literally like an hour or two before it's going to get posted. But let's say 30,000 times 12 is $360,000 a year. So you do that consistently for 4 years and you're over a millionaire, right? 360,000 times 4. 1.4 million. I mean, maybe it's 5 years, solid 5 years to get over $1 million in the bank if you're paying taxes. But the idea, too, is that, let's say you did that with a YouTube channel, you could create a second YouTube channel. That's how these fucking people half my age are multimillionaires, is because they get one going. And while that one's building up, they start a second one, and now you got two building up. So if just double that, right? Let's say 360,000, right, times three. Yeah, you got three channels pumping that. You got $1 million in a year. So if you could do that, why in the fuck would you be spending any of your time trying to sell people like me a fucking course to teach us how to do it? Because I'll put it to you like this. In my mind, if I was able to do that, and I was able to pay off all my debts, pay off my parents' mortgage, pay off my sister's mortgage, you know, buy myself a nice car, maybe two, a house or a condo somewhere really nice. I might even leave the country because of how crazy everything's getting, who knows, or buy a boat that I could live on. All I'm saying is, if I was able to generate that consistently to the point where I wasn't even thinking about it, I don't know that I would go through the effort to be trying to get other people to pay me to teach them how to do it. And so not understanding the motivation there in my mind immediately says, okay, they're clearly not doing what they're claiming they're doing. They're trying to sell me on the idea that they are, so that I will give them my meager 100, 500, 1,000 or whatever. And if they get five of me every day to sign up, that's how they're making their fucking money. And that's bullshit. That's bullshit. It's either that or I'm so risk averse that I'm letting myself believe that it can't possibly be possible. But at the same time, they're doing it. The Mr. Beast is out there. At least he's building fucking, you know, clean drinking water wells in other countries, if he even is. That could all be fake too, I guess. But the idea is there are people who have figured out how to not be in the scrambling, desperate mode that I'm in. And as much as I had some realizations recently that there's some near-term relief on its way, and that I may not be in as bad a shape right now at the moment as I am, I also have to keep thinking about, you know, okay, I can't live through every year the way I just lived through this one. I need to get myself on a permanently better track. And I feel like the only way to do that is to figure out how to start living in this world by its rules, using its tools, as even just as a means to an end, as a means to getting myself to the point where, like, I haven't been able to be creative because the stress is all about survival. You know, and I try to think of, God, please, everybody, regardless of how you feel about her, at least understand why I'm bringing her up. J.K. Rowling wrote Harry Potter when her life was at rock bottom. What I'm stuck with right now is going, well, where did she find the time to write a fucking novel? I mean, I only work part-time, and all this other trying to find a job, which is a job in itself, trying to do work for this audiobook that I'm literally, like this week it's done. I swear to God, it's done this week. I just finished recording all of the outstanding revisions. Tomorrow I'm editing them. I just have to figure out one more thing about how to fix this one female voice, and then I hand it off, and I am done. But in all that, like, the level of exhaustion that is in the aftermath of all of that, it's like there have been so many nights I brought my laptop up to my room to try to hammer out a few more pages. I wrote one really awesome scene. I've outlined another. I thought it would be one scene. It's actually become such a sequence of events that it could be an entire episode of a show, but it's really going to wind up being a scene broken into multiple parts, and probably the first two parts will be in one episode, and the next part will be in the following episode if I were to be putting this into the resurging audio drama that I had been producing several years ago. And so at least I've done that, but it's like, you know, by the time I sit down with the laptop in front of me, it's just like my brain is jello. And I think, oh my God, how am I going to do this? And I feel like I let that minor, which it isn't even really a failure because I was at least productive the rest of the day. But still, the fact that, like, I just go, how did she write that fucking book? I mean, granted, yes, there's an awesome meme video that basically says it's Star Wars. She just restructured Star Wars. She just took Star Wars and turned it into fucking little kid wizards, but it's basically the same fucking elements. It's the same structure and everything, and the meme did such a great job. I would just say seek that out, or just look it up on YouTube. Harry Potter equals Star Wars, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Okay, I don't want to do that. My thing was unique enough that it should be its own thing, even though it's mostly homages to things that I love. So it has similarities, it has influences, but it is very much its own thing. It's like, how did George R. R. Martin write Game of Thrones? Well, probably a bad example. That fucker has left all of the people. I feel so bad for the people who've read the books, because the show came and went. The show surpassed where it was in the books. That fucking guy still hasn't written the sixth book that he's been talking about finishing for the last 3 years or more. Like, dude, how did you write the first five and you just can't finish this last one or this next one? It's not even slated to be the last novel. But at this point, you might as well make it. People hated the ending of the show. And allegedly, it's what he wants the ending of the books to be. Like, fuck, dude. It's a bad example, but the idea that that guy came up with the concept from a family of turtles that had lived in his backyard, and then one day he came out and found one of them dead, and he goes, oh, you must have been betrayed and murdered, and that became the whole story of, oh, Ned Stark, you know? How did the fucker do it? And he's a lot older than I am. I don't know. In any case, aren't you glad I'm back? What's it like for you all? How's your week been? I mean, I'm still... I say all this with the caveat that it's like, as hard and discouraged, as hard as it is and as discouraged as I get at times, I'm still determined to turn it around. Because I'll be damned if I'm going to exit this entire event called life without, at least for a year. It doesn't have to be for more than a year. I want one fucking year of comfort. I want 1 year of more stability and comfort than I've ever experienced, even in the times when I was still a more important and lucrative part of the machine. I know for a fact that I can at least get that. I am very much in the mindset of wanting it to be for the rest of my life, but if I could just get one fucking year of not worrying like this, not waking up in a panic attack, of knowing that whatever life throws at me that day, I got it. I'm fine. Throw me your best fucking shot. Jack Burton looks at old Storm right in the eye and says, give me your best shot. I can take it. That's what I want. I think probably it would help if I defined the format what that would look like, but fuck it. At least I know that that's what I want. And I think that includes having a beautiful woman whom I adore from her core to the top of her head to the tip of her toes for every possible reason you can adore somebody. I'm pretty sure that's part of it too. So I know that. And knowing is half the battle. So until next time, go Joe. And that's G.I. Joe. That's not a political statement of any kind. Chill the fuck out with that. This is what I'm talking about with the world. I am disappointed in you. So I'd like to be comfortable enough to not have to give a fuck and be able to live my life over here without it impinging upon yours. You don't have to listen to this podcast, but I'm glad that you do. And I'm glad that you're here. And I would hope that whatever storm you're going through, it is less complicated and self-sabotaged than my own. But even if it's not, I'm glad you're still here. And I hope you're here next time. Make sure that you are.
You've been listening to a production of the Hollow Knight Network. Feeling It, Healing It, A Diary of Recovery, featuring Dave Maresca. Thank you for listening to Feeling It, Healing It, A Diary of Recovery. Dave Maresca is not a trained medical professional, psychologist, psychiatrist, or licensed professional trained in providing therapeutic mental health care. This podcast is an account of his life experiences and meant to be just that. Any advice or suggestions made in the extemporaneous dialogue of the podcast is not intended to be medical or legal advice. If such advice is what you're seeking, you are encouraged to seek out the services of a licensed professional. The Hollow Knight Network and Dave Maresca assume no liability or responsibility for the information provided in these episodes.